Welcome to the Ayahuasca Parents Podcast.
Right on.
Well, hello, Mr. Joel.
What's up?
So we have an hour and a half before we have to run carpool.
Yeah.
Hopefully one of us has a clock.
I'll keep track of time.
A watch.
I'll keep track of time.
So today...
Yeah, let's jump into it.
Yeah, we're going to talk about... Well, is there anything you wanted to talk about in general today? How adorable our dog is? He's just been brushed. No?
No.
I know, he's adorable.
No, we should probably get into it because, you know, the general state of the world with the crazy politics and all that stuff is something that probably everybody needs something else to listen to so they don't have to pay attention to that stupid shit.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about that. So we left things off with talking about the first time that we went to Peru and...
We left off on our fourth ceremony, didn't we?
Yeah. Well, we left off, finishing up at the sanctuary and our first trip to ayahuasca.
Yeah.
You talked a little bit about some of the results that you had coming home.
Yep.
Yep. And
with the allergies.
Yep, with the allergies and the allergies be gone medicine that ayahuasca became for you.
Yeah. Came home and binged birds.
Some chicken.
Just ate every chicken. Determined that life is no better whatsoever with turkey.
35 years of not being able to eat poultry or most shellfish. And you had it all.
Couldn't eat any shellfish other than imitation crab, but it's imitated by a fish.
Yeah. And the only chicken you could eat was cream of chicken soup, which we accidentally found out about. That must not have been chicken in the cream of chicken soup.
No.
Campbell's. Campbell's were on to you. That's not chicken.
No, it's like pork or something.
It's got to be pork.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And so today we wanted to kind of talk about what that was like coming home after having this incredibly mind-opening, mind-expanding, fucking healing event that took place.
Yeah.
And we're so grateful we got to do it together.
Mm-hmm.
We've both been back to Spirit Quest, to the Amazon. However, not together since 2014.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. No, I think it was good. Cause you know, life after psychedelics comes at you fast. And if you did it alone, the other person's going to look at you like you're crazy.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing I'm the most grateful for is that I had somebody that, you know, I could sit down with and we could talk about and discuss, like leaving our bodies.
Yeah.
Had I come home and said that to you, you would have looked at me like, what on earth happened?
Yeah.
You know? And so it was so nice that from the beginning, Joel and I have been, I mean, we were already, you know, friends, lovers, you know, man and wife, but it was really nice to have a friend that I could just talk to about everything and that I wouldn't be judged, because I think you start to question your sanity. Like, was that real? You know, you start to kind of draw in after those experiences, you know, what you've been told reality is, what you've been told hallucinations are, what you've been told. It's a lot of what you've been told.
Mm-hmm.
And then you decide, nope, I'm going to challenge everything. You know,
yeah.
When you suffer, and I was suffering big time. And really, you were suffering too.
Well, I didn't know how much I was suffering until I wasn't suffering.
Right.
I think that's the case for most people.
Yeah, you really have no idea you're swimming around in a dirty fishbowl until one day you decide that you're going to jump out into clean water.
Mm-hmm.
And it's traumatizing. And people don't really think about that. Like, because like for me, I spent so many decades suffering and thinking to myself, if only I wasn't an alcoholic anymore, if I only wasn't obese anymore,
right.
if only I wasn't, then I'll be happy. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so we came home and we had these profound healing events. Oh, that's what I was going to say is that, you know, when you've been suffering for as long as I've been suffering for, then you find out that there's possibly this deemed by our government Schedule I drug that it has a possibility of not just alleviating symptoms, but that could cure you.
Mm-hmm.
And then it works.
Yeah.
I mean, holy shit, you come home and you're looking at everything that you've been taught and told. You look at
everything differently.
Right. And this was like the biggest thing for me. I came home and it was like, well, if they lied to me about this,
right,
what else have they lied to me about? And a lot of people are like, well, they don't know. They didn't know. Nope. Nope. All you have to do is start researching psychedelics, entheogens, plant medicines, whatever you want to call them. And you get to know really quick that, nope, the government is very well aware of what these plant medicines can do.
Yeah, for sure. The world government is,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, they're in the know.
Yeah, they're in the know because it's everything's opposite.
Right. It really feels that way, is that so everything is opposite.
You're sad, so we're going to give you a pill full of formaldehyde and, you know, fluoride. That you'd have to take forever, and you're probably going to have to mess with the doses forever because as your body switches, you're going to have to find something else that works or up the dose or whatever. And yeah, you can go to the Amazon and you can take a plant.
Right. The side effects of the pharmaceutical is that your hippocampus is going to atrophy, and that sooner rather than later, you're going to have some sort of Alzheimer's or some sort of dementia that settles in.
Right. And cancer, right. Probably.
Yeah. The side effect of the Amazon is that... Of the Jungian medicines is that you're going to be cured. You're going to click back into the ecosystem. You're going to have a desire to do something that benefits the greater good of humanity, and just be in general a better person.
And you might have a minor panic attack when you look around. You're like, holy shit, everything's messed up. Everything's broken.
Upside down
and backwards. Alcohol and cigarettes are legal. I know. Cannabis and plant medicines are not.
So crazy.
Right. Organic food has to be labeled. But non-organic food doesn't.
Yep.
Non-GMO doesn't. Like, I mean, when you come back and you start looking at everything for what it is, and I don't think people, we get so caught up in that's a conspiracy theory, that's this, that's that. But, you know, it's like, you know, I remember in 2014 or 15, whatever it was, and they passed the law not requiring GMOs to be labeled. What?
I know. It's just, it really is upside down.
What?
And
everything's and backwards.
I know. And so I remember like one of the first things that I started to research, and I remember coming home and going, okay, so what's next? Mm-hmm. Like what? Like my pain had been such a big part of my life and I really had no idea how big of a part.
And all this time free to think now.
Yeah. And it was towards the end of the year. So business for me was winding down. I was getting into my slow season. So I just started to like kind of follow my curiosities. I remember researching all things cannabis and hemp, why it became illegal, the Alsinger Act, which is the Marijuana Act of 1937. And that led me to dryer balls, to dryer sheets. And I know that sounds crazy, but but it was like I couldn't help but when I was researching hemp and cannabis to and why it was illegal to come across just chemicals in general. And I went down a crazy, crazy rabbit hole.
Well, and before you go any further on that, your brain wasn't functioning that way before you took ayahuasca. Your brain didn't have time.
I didn't have the space. It was literally.
You
didn't have the
space. You had to be defragged.
I was literally defragged. Yep. I was literally defragged. And it was like, I didn't have any space to think about any of these types of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so like I went down this xenoestrogen rabbit hole about how many chemicals are approved by the FDA to put in our food, how there was no regulation, still no regulation about what we smear on the, you know, biggest organ of our body, which is our skin. You know, I mean, and I remember the first thing that I did was I went down that chemical rabbit hole and cleared out all the chemicals from our house.
Yeah.
We stopped drinking tap water. We were drinking, cleaner water that then now I remineralize and we also try and structure the water as well.
I mean, at first we were going to an aquifer, but it seemed like it was dirty.
Yeah. Well, as above, so below.
Something changed.
Yeah. You really, at this point, any sort of, you know, public aquifer.
But drinking clean water, and you got to think about this, right? Alcohol is made with tap water.
Yeah.
Right? Wines, you know, I don't know how wines are made, but I know alcohol, I know like beer and that kind of stuff and you know, soda, right? They're just using tap water. So when you stop drinking that stuff and you go to clean water, there you can feel a difference.
Well, you don't feel so thirsty, first and foremost.
That's true.
Yeah, it's like you're actually getting hydrated, you know. But let's see, I went and got dryer balls. I learned that dryer sheets are the number one carcinogen in our home.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe the amount of carcinogens that we have around us, that we always have around us in everything.
Right.
And I'd get up on the FDA site and I started to Google, or not Google, but like in their search engine, you know, put in certain chemicals and just to see what would come back, like what schedule they were, what level they were of a carcinogen. Blew my mind. I think I did that for a whole week. And it was like, remember, I was like, all of a sudden I'm making our glass cleaner. I'm making our everything. I was making detergents for dishes.
And which I have to add is cheaper and works better.
Yeah. At some point I should put out there like what I use and like how easy it is to make it.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to go buy a bunch of ingredients. It's basically like vinegar, baking soda, a squirt of, you know, Meyer soap.
Some of the cheapest things are vinegar and baking soda.
Yeah. Some essential oils.
Yeah.
But I mean, for the most part, you know, we clean once a week, you know, we just use all, you know, homemade stuff.
Yeah.
Let's see. I just learned everything that there was to learn about chemicals and food, you know, what happens when you interface and interact with a lot of xenoestrogens, you know, why a lot of women hold on to fat. You know, I really started to research a lot of nutrition, and even though in my job, it has nothing to do with the sciences. For me, when I went to college, it was all science based. So I was headed into the medical field, and then really when I met you, is when I sort of course corrected or took a left turn into a completely different industry. But I had all this foundation, you know, biology, physiology, anatomy, chemistry, physics, mathematics. You know, and so for me, you know, I quickly learned that I was not okay with just researching, like just finding a good source to.
You want to read the peer reviewed papers.
I didn't want to just find a good source that was going to synopsize, you know, a case study. I was interested in understanding the case studies myself, which meant whipping out some of my old textbooks.
Yeah.
And really re-educating myself about, you know, physiological processes or the biochemical processes, some of the anatomy, just basic, you know, functions of the body and the anatomy.
Which was good because I was interested in it, but not enough to go research. So it was kind of nice. I was the beneficiary.
If that's the benefactor.
The benefactor. Thank you. Ayahuasca didn't make my vocabulary better.
That's not true.
you shared it all with me. At the same time, I'm back and I'm living my worst nightmare of.
Yeah. Well, and I was just going to say one other thing too, is that it was interesting. Another side effect for me was this opening up of physics.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It was really my worst subject in college. I had the hardest time understanding, really excelled at chemistry and mathematics.
Teaching you shitty physics.
So. probably, but I started to wonder about some of these concepts, specifically quantum physics. You know, like wow, you know, there's all of these kind of rules when it comes to atoms and how they behave, yet we don't ever integrate them within ourselves. And I started to at first think that these concepts were very spiritual in nature. You know,
which happens a lot after you take a psychedelic.
Yeah. Well, what happens is you start to research things. And so you start to pull in other people's labeling and what they think, you know, that is happening to you. And you know, I could go on a big tangent here about.
We had to do a podcast one time about like the.
The woo woo.
Yeah. The woo woo.
The new age.
The spiritual ego.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. The spiritual identities that people a lot of people that work with plant medicines all of a sudden.
It's a lot of similarities. Everybody goes through it. Most people are not immune to this.
Yep. They all think that they're going to be a shaman.
Fly through it and it's like it was nothing, and others get stuck for years.
Yeah.
Fair to say.
Yeah. So, I mean, like the other things, you know, you start opening up to look at everything. So we were looking at ancient cultures and we were looking at, you know, ascended masters, or we were looking at archangels, or we were looking at ETs. We were looking at, I mean, basically everything that anybody ever told us was bullshit. We were like, is it?
Well, I think that's safe to say, because when you first come to the conclusion that life is backwards,
right?
Right. Then you have to question everything. And there's a lot of things you can see in your own reality, even without a plant medicine. You're like, that's not right.
Yeah. I mean, we were breaking things down in the matrix, or the reality that we were raised in. So we were breaking down things about the educational system. Like, why right. does it have to be that way? Government, religion, you know, the government is the world's religion. Well, so why does it have to be that way? Why does religion have to be that way? Why does healthcare have to be that way?
When you go down those rabbit holes, if you will, then you start uncovering history they don't share anymore, mm-hmm. like how the Rockefellers hijacked Western medicine mm-hmm. and compartmentalized it and then basically control it. You know, you don't understand that stuff because they're not going to teach you that.
Right. I mean, like,
those are all separate Google searches,
or the stock market, or the Federal mm-hmm. Reserve. I mean, like
the creation of money, the, you know, what the government's doing right now.
I mean, the creation of time and why it is the way it is. Right. I mean, like, we literally did what most people do, which is you have an insane amount of healing.
Yeah.
And that literally went against the grain of everything that we'd been conditioned and brainwashed into believing from the time that we were children, that this is how the system is. We fell in line in the system, and when the system no longer worked for us, we looked outside the system just a smidge, only to find out there's other things out there. And for that burst these two double doors wide open into let's explore everything.
I think anybody coming home doing a plant medicine, that's something you're going to participate in. You know, I don't think we should tell them what's right, what's wrong,
or how it's going to happen, because it will just normally unfold based on their curiosities.
Your mind gets cleared and it's open and it's curious.
Yeah, it really does.
I mean, that's what happens. Yeah. You have no idea how bogged down you are with life. And you have no idea, I think you have no idea how much of your time you spend worrying.
Oh, yeah. The anxiety.
We're all anxious beings because of our environment.
Well, I came across a saying one time that really resonated with me. And it was that if you have depression, it's because you're consumed with your past. If you have anxiety, you're consumed with the future. And most people toggle back and forth between these two things without ever paying attention to what really matters the most, which is being present and being right here, right now. Right. And you've heard, I'm sure anyone listening to this has probably heard this before by some spiritual teacher or some life coach or some
live in the now.
See me, be me. And everybody's attempted to market it and monetize it. But it's really, that's truthful wisdom, is about being present because it's the only thing that matters is the
now. By being present, you affect the future.
Right.
Rather than worrying about the future and affecting it really in a negative way.
But all of the systems, all of the systems we were born into keep you either in the past or in the future.
Yeah.
The medical system, the educational system, so it's designed to keep you from being present.
That was one of the first things I had to deal with when we came back, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I just quit a job that had a salary and had medical benefits. And we were medical benefits people.
Oh, we were like terrified about not having medical health benefits.
Well, we were terrified about getting any of the number of diseases that, you know, society tells you you're going to get no matter what you do.
All the branded diseases.
Right. You know. And, you know, so first up on the docket was healthcare, you know, and I'm looking at Obamacare going, there is no way we can afford this.
Well, it's no healthcare for families.
I mean, just so people know, in case you didn't have to go through that, you have a job that pays you benefits.
Or you're from a different country.
Or you're from a different country where your government gives it to you, I mean, or taxes you and then gives it to you, however it works. They wanted for a family of six, you know, they wanted like $750 a month with a $14,000 family deductible that had to have been, you know, satisfied before they start paying anything. I mean, you know, they'll give you discounts on your prescriptions and blah, 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 blah. But
we had no prescriptions.
Yeah. I mean, we'd become, and what was ringing in my head, and I think it was ringing in yours, is like, you know, it's that whole adage, you know, let food be thy medicine kind of thing, which I think those philosophers were onto something. So, you know, long story short, when you make better food choices, drink choices, you know, stop drinking the alcohol and just make better choices. You know, I'm not going to go on a rant about if you're a carnivore or if you're a plant-based or whatever, just clean up your diet,
clean ingredients,
get rid of chemicals, get rid of sugar, get rid of processed and try to eat as fresh, you know, unprocessed food. All of a sudden, family of six, four kids, we're not going to the doctor. Nobody's getting colds.
Yeah. In fact, our little one, our 9-year-old, she's never been on an antibiotic before.
No, she just doesn't get. And then you start to recognize what is a cold, right?
Right. It's detox.
It's a detox.
Yeah. So that was another rabbit hole I went down was about how the body's, again, the physiology of the body. Mm-hmm. A lot of it had a lot to do with the lymphatic system. I got hooked on a gentleman named Dr. Morris, M-O-R-S-E. And he's incredible. I learned so much just watching his videos. Although I don't share some of the opinions that he has about being fruitarian. I do think that eating live fiber-dense foods are incredibly important, you know, the biochemistry lessons basically that I got to learn and then fact check.
Yeah.
I mean, that was revolutionary and that got me into botanical medicines and I am very much a botanical medicine junkie.
And it works. You know, kids are complaining about a sore throat. You treat their ears and it's gone in less than 24 hours.
I know. People are like, I don't understand. If it's in the throat, then why are you treating the ears? You know, and then
shit rolls downhill. Buddy.
Yeah. I'm like, it just takes a minute to educate you about, you know, what mucus is and it's acidic and you know how it's just chemistry and you want to balance. And so we use something that's alkaline, which is hydrogen peroxide that helps to neutralize the acid and really lessen the inflammation in the eustachian tubes, which is why you're getting the sore throat is because of the mucus that's or the lymph that's running down the back of the tonsils. And you have friends that will single dudes that will call all the time and be like, hey, ask your witch wife
what I need
to do for this skin condition or this or that. And
because it works and you don't have to go to the doctor. And I mean, you know, like that'd be another podcast. What have we learned medically? You know, but like just taking that blurb that you just said, we don't go to the doctor.
Nope.
Nobody's on anything prescription. If anybody has a cold, it's like less than 24 hours.
But that's because we see it as it's not because of germs. It's because of detox.
Yeah.
And when you understand what the body's attempting to do and you understand the lymphatic system, I can't stress that enough. And you understand what inflammation is.
Yeah.
You can help support the body. Through a headache, you can help support it through an ear infection. You know, I've helped my daughter that had a urinary tract infection. It's just a different perspective of the body that we've not been conditioned into thinking about. We've been conditioned to give all of our power away to these quote professionals that slaved away for 8 to 12 years and got into a $500,000 worth of debt. And because of that, we all give them unprecedented, you know.
We give them power.
Yeah, power.
To prescribe us synthetic versions of what we can go get in our garden.
Right.
I mean, that's the bullshit. Well,
and that's the thing. So I think we mentioned him once before, this scientist that we both know, this nutritional scientist that we both know. He says that there's a database of over 1 billion botanicals and the chemical compositions of these botanicals. You know, and then what do? They don't try and figure out how to get the intact plants to the people, to the consumers, because you can't patent a plant.
Right.
And because of that, they synthesize it. They synthesize it.
They leave out important
alkaloids.
Yeah. So, and this all happened within the first 5-6 months of being back.
Yeah, life got interesting. What did our family think?
Our family thought we were batshit crazy. What do you mean you're not going to have health insurance? No, I'm not going to have health insurance. What do you mean you're not going to use toothpaste anymore? No, see, the thing is I'm going to make it.
Yeah.
I'm going to make the toothpaste. Until we found it actually a brand that was the same as what we were making, but then we don't have time to make it, so we just go buy it. But the point is, you know, all those chemicals they put in your toothpaste, they might be hurting your teeth.
Because, and or they go right to your brain. Your brain is right there. You've got a soft palate. Like,
I know. Yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to come across as know-it-alls. I'm just saying these are like the things that were exploding in our awareness. And the thing is, like, you know, if you were to ever meet me, I got white teeth. I got no cavities. My teeth are just fine. My kids still see dentists and orthodontist. I don't.
Yeah.
You know, they do though. And their teeth are fine. You know?
We don't do the fluoride treatments.
The point is eliminate chemicals.
Right.
There's really, like, when it comes down to it, like, if I were to give anybody advice, not go vegan, go plant-based, none of that, because that's so polarizing, right? But we can all get behind, don't eat chemicals. Don't consume chemicals.
Yeah, but then and I could jump on a bandwagon here about, you know, the natural chemicals that are in animals, you know, the sex hormones that are in animals.
Well,
the other kinds of chemicals.
Yeah, but I mean, like, a starting point would be, you know, you know, like, in our house, it's full of all the good bacteria, you know, because we don't use antibacteria cleaning agents.
Yeah, if you're using an antibacteria, what you're doing is you're creating a petri dish.
Yeah.
To breed. So, and you have to understand how bacteria works. At some point, I should start putting the links into some of these like TED Talks and things like that. There's a great TED Talk about bacteria and how it moves and works. And once I understood how bacteria worked, I was like, oh my gosh, well, I need to inundate my entire house with as much good bacteria as possible so that the house becomes a healing home.
And how'd that work out?
Well, it is. I mean, we just don't get sick.
Almost 6 years into this.
Yep.
And nobody has seen the doctor.
I know, it's crazy.
And we have little kids.
Yep.
Who go to school with sick kids.
Yeah, and what we've noticed is, like, this time of year, we lay off the sugar. I pump them full of the pre and probiotics, you know.
We still eat treats. They're just, you know.
Organic sugars and things like that, you know. Mm-hmm. But I guess my point is that we know what we need to do when we need to do it to make sure the kids have a kick-ass immune system. We work with a lot of medicinal mushrooms, the non-psychoactive ones, you know, so the turkey's tail and the lion's mane and reishi.
And this stuff, this info or this need to learn comes at you fast because
it was every day. It was every day. It was like, guess what I found? Or you were like, we got to watch this documentary. You know, or it was like, check out this case study. There's this great website. It's called Google Scholar, guys.
And this is good. This is good stuff. It was like much needed change. It felt right. Mm-hmm. We all started feeling better. The vibe in our house changed.
Yeah.
You know, and how did people judge us?
Well, horribly, especially when we had the audacity to start looking into and getting curious about things like crystals or tarot readings or psychics or, you know, natal astrological charts or the moon cycles or.
Yeah, there's no reason not to, you know, get curious and look at it. I mean, I think our opinions and, you know, the way we view some of those things have changed over time, but like, I have the right to look at that. Like,
well, yeah, I think the idea there with the closed-minded is the thinking's already been done there. You don't need to look at it because the thinking's been done. Stop doing the thinking over there and looking at that because it's been done for you. And I guess, again, like, we're coming from a place of, hold on. I have been to psychiatrists and psychologists since I was 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in a shit ton of pain and I was an alcoholic for 10 years. I suffered endlessly and needlessly when I could have taken one dose of psilocybin mushrooms and had, you know, 85% of my pain gone. So sorry, like, I'm going to look at everything.
It reminds me of this documentary I watched on Vice the other day. And it's this tribe in San Paulo, which I guess is a country.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I thought it was a city, but they kept referring to it as a country. So anyway, please don't correct me if you know the answer. But the thing was, it's tradition that they're giving their kids mushrooms at six.
Psilocybin,
small doses to help them go on to the next stage of life. And then it's preteen and then it's pre-adult. And then it's, you know, I mean, it's just, and that's, that has been in their culture for as long as they can go back in their culture.
Well, ayahuasca was given to adolescents that were transitioning into adults, mm-hmm. you know, sometime within that 13 to 18 year old time period, and was considered a rite of passage.
Yeah.
It was given to them so that it could make sense of any of any childhood trauma that they have. And then they could click in to the tribe and, you know, and be more of a benefit.
So for anyone listening to this, this is how I view this. Yeah. Right. You're 6 years old and you got your first suitcase of baggage. Right. Well, I carried my 6 year old baggage, my 7 year old baggage all the way to 40.
Yeah.
So I had all those years of baggage that I took with me, all these people leaning on me, put, you know, whatever happened. Right. In these other cultures, it's like, we're going to help you remove that baggage.
Right.
So as you move forward in life, you just stay light.
Right.
You stay light.
Unless you were westernized and then you think that you're superior and you think that you know everything and that there's all these systems in place that have already done all the thinking for you. Yeah, and then, and then you start to realize how uneducated the educated are, or how unintelligent the educated are, and how everyone is just sort of like clicked into these systems.
Nobody asks any questions. You know, that was something else, you know, I had to deal with when we got back, was just asking a doctor what was in a shot that they wanted to give. Like, what are the ingredients in that? I don't know. What do you mean? I don't know. You're trying to put that in my body. You don't even know what's in it. 'Cause I know what's in it. You don't know what's in it.
We're finding out there's no double blind testing for vaccinations.
Yeah.
I mean, like just some of the bullshit things, that your bullshit meter starts to go up.
Yeah.
And you're like, what is happening here?
So when you come back from a super psychedelic, I don't know what else to call it, a massive dose of a, you know, a
huge healing event. Life
changing healing event.
Because it's not just psychedelics. It's also people that have gone through near death experiences, have gone through some massive amount of trauma.
But you look at everything in life. Mm-hmm. You start taking inventory. You start looking at the food. You start looking at your lifestyle. You start looking at how you spend your time. And then there's even a weird moment where you start analyzing your thoughts.
Oh yeah. Well, it's not, like, and that's like self-communication work, which is amazing.
Yeah. But I mean, like that, you know, I don't think people understand. I think more people have self-deprecating thoughts than they want to admit.
Oh, yeah. Well, I wasn't even aware of it really until I started listening to someone named Abraham Hicks, and I really liked her. Mm-hmm. I liked what she had to say. And I liked how she kind of painted a really cute, very rudimentary picture in my head of, you know, basically what you focus on, you get more of. And that plugged and played with me with some of the, you know, like the my curiosities with physics.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, how the rules of our atoms, you know, how we basically create things into reality. That's not woo-woo, that's physics.
Yeah.
I've realized throughout my journey now that there's a practical plug and play with anything that's woo-woo. And what I think happened is we expanded our consciousness to a point where we were willing to step outside of our ego to look at everything that was out there. But the thing is that just like there's a system, we were kind of talking about this earlier, just like there's a system that we were born into, there's another system that has been created for anyone that bursts out of the system that we were born into.
Mm-hmm.
That system is filled with just as much bullshit, if not more bullshit.
Yeah.
And I would say probably 85 to 90% of what we looked at from 2014 to 2016 was BS. And it was almost like we were dropping belief systems, like we were tearing down, you know, the different systems, the ones that we'd been born into, you know, educational systems, you know, the healthcare system, the, mm-hmm. you know, food industry, blah, blah, blah. And we were kind of proverbially, I need to like stop using that word because I can't pronounce it, but we were literally taking things out of our basket, you know, like, nope, that's not true. This isn't true. That's not true. This isn't true. And we were adding these other things into our baskets as if they were truth, you know? And it wasn't until the like mid 2016, I think it was mid 2016. I got back from Sedona and I was like, I think we've, got a bunch of things in our basket that are not true.
Yeah.
And I felt like a fool. And I think a lot of people probably
do that. It was a good lesson, though, because do you do that anymore?
Well, no, because I came up with a litmus test to make sure that I would never, ever, not ever, not one more time ever fall into anything, you know, that was bullshit. And that was, and this goes for everything across the board. I ask myself two questions about things. One, is it designed to separate us, meaning mm-hmm. all of us? And does it benefit the greater good of humanity? And if the answers come back that yes, it's designed to separate us, then it's not in line with the truth.
Right.
And if it doesn't benefit the greater good of humanity,
yeah,
then it's not in line with the truth. And we went through kind of a depression, I think, in 16-17.
Well, it kind of felt like we were starting over again.
Yeah, where it was like, you know, we...
For the good.
Yeah, we shelved a lot of things and went, wow, like, we...
Well, I mean, for me, I've learned a lot of lessons where I try not to... Those things that you're talking about, we bought into it and formed a belief.
Yeah, we did. We and believed.
I try not to believe in anything. I try to observe.
Right.
And I can observe something and buy it, but I'm not attached to it, meaning that I'm not going to hang on to it if something better comes along, or if a better explanation, or something that just shows me that what I've been observing is not true.
And guess what? We reserve the right to ebb and flow and shift and change depending on the new information that we get. This
idea, humanity's problem, yeah, right? We're not ebbing and flowing and changing with the new information.
Well, no, we somehow think that you have to pick core values and stick with them.
Everything's pick a team.
Yeah, even though everything is infinite. Like, mm-hmm. you just take mathematics and numbers, for instance. They're infinite.
Yeah.
Like, there is no... If you ever find yourself in a position, or if I ever found myself in a position where it was like, okay, nope, this is it. I've read it all. I know everything.
I have all the information.
The truth is that everything that you know is a layer of understanding for something like a foundational level, a rudimentary level for something else that is for something else, for something else. Like, for instance, manifesting, right? It's like a buzzword. Everybody's talking about manifesting. People have watched The Secret. You know, mm-hmm. that's a rudimentary foundational way of thinking about manifesting. That doesn't, like, for instance, that doesn't work for me anymore, because as you evolve and as you change, sort of the rules kind of shift and change depending on what your perspectives and your awareness are. That doesn't mean I'm better than anybody. That's not what I'm trying to say. But I'm just trying to say that there's no, like, this is how you do it, period. Like, it's like, that's how you manifest. Like, nope, that's not true. That's one of the rudimentary foundational levels of manifestation until you shift perspective and broaden your awareness. Mm-hmm. And then it's not going to work like that for you.
Yeah.
You know? And I think, honestly, I got to a point where I had another moment in 2016 where I'm looking around going, so this is it, huh? I'm supposed to, like, you know, pick a spiritual identity, like this Joker over here is done, and like run retreats and stuff. Like,
I need to get like a mandala shirt, like, and put my hair in a ponytail and wear my crystals.
Yeah. And I need to use specific verbiage and language so that everybody knows how enlightened I am. Or I need to set up a YouTube video and do silly YouTube videos about, you know, like, you know, this is your spirit guide, and this is what it is, your higher self is. And like, it drives me nuts and bonkers, because I'm like,
you know who you are out there. Yeah. You know who you are.
Yeah.
It's not cool. What you're doing is you're hijacking somebody's thought processes. And you're no different than religion. You're like, look, yeah, I have all the answers. Tune in tomorrow when I release episode 300 for the next answer. Shut up.
It's a spiritual ego identity. And I got caught there. For a good bit of time, you know, you got caught there a good bit of time. We still travel in that area sometimes. Yeah, but this is what I decided is I don't need any validation from anybody to know that I know what I know.
Right.
You know,
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
But I gotta adjust my microphone.
That I can just be, I am very confident. When you get a download, like a legit download, and the way that they work for me are these flashes of perspective in my mind's eye. So it's like...
Which also started happening after ayahuasca.
Right. This is not really something... I mean, I think to some degree it was kind of happening in a different way before ayahuasca. But after ayahuasca, it was like... It would be like going through like a photo album and you coming across a picture of you and, you know, someone that you love, you know, outside playing around in the water, you know, on a bright sunny day, and you can go back to that, looking at that picture, you can go back and you can remember what the weather was like, what the sun felt like, what the air smelled like, you know, what the water temperature was like, you know, what your brother or sister were doing or your loved one was doing, you know, what you know what I'm talking about? My downloads are like that. So it's literally like a quick flash picture. And sometimes it takes me, I don't know, sometimes it'll take me days to be able to articulate. And I throughout the years have discussed them and written them down. And then I got to a certain point where I just wanted to keep them private. Yeah. And so I don't.
Because it's for you, right?
Yeah, I don't share them. Yeah. You know, I don't even share them with you sometimes because it's just not necessary.
Yeah.
That blows people's minds sometimes. They're like, what do you mean? What do you mean you don't share them with Joel? Like, you guys okay? I'm like, totally fine. It's just one of those things where it's like, it's not something to share. It's not something to share. It's not something to monetize.
Sometimes it's something I shouldn't be hearing because I'm not there yet.
Well, so
or whoever else, you know.
Well, so this is something else that I realized was that, and I know I recognize that we're kind of on a tangent, but who cares? Something else I recognize, and a good example of this is Eckhart Tolle's the Power of Now.
Yeah.
And everybody that is doing any sort of self-actualization was very interested in this idea, this concept. And if you read any of the message boards about, you know, trying to be more present in with any spiritual, quote, spiritual teacher, you know, there's a lot of people that are like, I'm trying to be present. I don't know how to be present. I like the concept. I want this concept. I want to integrate this concept, but it's not working for me. And that was a big eye opener for me, which is, yeah, that's because that's not where you need to be. You need to be somewhere different because we're all little fractal perspectives. Nobody else is looking through your eyes but you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's not what you're supposed to be looking at right now. Maybe that's not what, you know, our collective needs right now.
Yeah.
You know, our collective doesn't need all of us focusing on the exact same thing at the exact same time all the time.
Yeah.
You know, that's why we're so individualized. My two cents.
No.
Yeah. And so I sort of did. I shut it down because I'm like, what I realized was that the downloads I was getting were very interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting to me, interesting to others. But I think to some degree it was making people feel less than. And I don't want to make people feel less than.
Yeah. Well, it's a weird time when all of a sudden you have, I hate to loop back, but I'm looping back.
No, do it.
Because it's a weird time when all of a sudden you have the space. Mm-hmm. And the time to think, receive thoughts, to investigate, to do your own research. You know, I remember when I came back and I felt like my mind was tongue-tied. Mm. You know, the story I like to tell is I'm trying to build stair risers outside, you know, for our deck.
Right.
Couldn't figure out how to do it, which is stupid.
It was like you were in a brain fog.
Yeah.
It was like your brain had shut down for maintenance.
Yeah. Yeah. I wasn't quite done to fragging. I think I had a lot of fragging, you know. Coming back without, you know, that allergy that I had for 35 years fucked with me a little bit, I think, you know.
And this is the integration. Like when people talk about.
This is the 99% of the work that needs to be done.
Yeah. And this is what it involves is, and Don Howard put it the best. Our shaman, he said that you're going to go back home and you're going to think that everybody's changed. And the truth is none of them have changed. You're the one that's changed.
Yeah.
And depending on the familial relationships that you have, what kind of, you know, work you're in, you're looking to, I mean, you could completely go back home and it feels like you're blowing up your life. You're changing professions. You're changing relationships.
Well, your likes and dislikes are different.
Yep.
You know, for me, it was like trying to, for me, I thought I had all the best ideas and that I knew the secret and, you know, it was interesting. Like that one day we were kind of sitting in the hammocks at the sanctuary and I get this like phrase that keeps popping in my head. Now you have all the answers, but you have to wait for the question.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, I don't know what that means. So, but when I came home and I'm blonde on everybody, you need to go do ayahuasca. And but also at the same time, I'm just saying things as truth because it's truth to me, whatever it might be.
You know? Well, whatever you were, we were researching, we would tell people, and we should never have told people.
No, never should have told people because what happened, I mean, just basically like my advice to anyone, I can tell you right now, 100% doing ayahuasca was literally the best thing I ever did for me and my family. 100%.
Yeah.
Same for you.
Yep.
It's an inside job. So
it totally is.
What I learned is not applicable to most people because they're bogged down. Their mind is tied up the way mine was before I left.
Yeah.
And so I can tell you all the thoughts and experiences that I had. It's not going to resonate because you got other things rattling around inside your head.
Yeah. What else we learned was that it was better just to try and be the very best people we could be and let people get curious about what we were doing.
Yeah.
And not going around preaching it like, you know, like the, you know, preaching a religion or something.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I think by preaching it, we were also kind of alerting people that we know something's wrong with them. And that's not our place either. That's just an opinion anyways.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like specifically my side of the family, you know, I think I talked about the way I eat or I think I talked about everything, all the changes that I've made pretty much every time somebody, no wonder they don't talk to me. Like I was an annoying fucker for like a year.
Well, really, you know, it had nothing to do with you. It was we were bumping into their cognitive dissonance. I mean, daily.
Yeah.
And I think they just, you know, I don't think they appreciated it. I don't, you know, if you're not in a place where you want to do any personal introspection, you know, seeing other people shift and change and come up with, you know, different ahas and conclusions than what you were collectively raised to believe, you know, is a little, it's a little much. You know,
most people aren't raised to free think because it's impossible because you're being raised by a tribe and you're all collectively having similar thought patterns.
Yeah.
You know, and so you take on people's within your family's likes, dislikes in all subjects,
mm-hmm.
you know, like my house, like 90% of my house was politically one way as opposed to the other way. Why? Because mom and dad were.
Right. You
know, just a stupid example, but that's an example of same with your food likes and dislikes, mm-hmm. same with your music likes and dislikes and go, you can go on and on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the ayahuasca as it's helping you basically, it, you know, the way, the easy way to explain it is it shows you what's holding you back, but it also strips away the programming.
Yeah, that's a really great way of putting it. It literally strips away all of your like preconditions and your programming, and it gives you the ability to really want to open up because you've expanded. That's the thing, is that you've expanded,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of us have worked through victimization in our fear programming.
Yeah.
And we had the ability and the balls to go ahead and look at everything.
Yeah.
What I realized too was that ayahuasca actually showed me in four sessions or four ceremonies, it really kind of gave me the setup for my integration, you know, and I realized that, my ceremonies, were a great outline for how to approach anything. What I learned, meaning that like I learned forgiveness.
Yeah.
I learned compassion and unconditional love and acceptance.
Yeah.
And so when I went through my integration and a lot of it had to deal with, I just made some really shitty choices in my life. So I'd left off, like just let, you know, some bombs off in my life that I felt like I needed to clean up. And so I would use that process, you know, the forgiveness, the, you know, compassion. And I would do this for myself first, forgiveness of myself, compassion, unconditional love and acceptance as I was traversing through some of these experiences that I had in my life where I played the part of the perpetrator.
Mm-hmm.
And everything in my life changed. How my relationship with my children, how I spoke to my children, what I wanted for my children, what I wanted for myself as a mother for my children, you know, our relationship. I mean, our relationship, I am amazed that you and I have made it. And, and I don't mean that in a mean way. I mean that in a wow, like I'm really impressed with us because there have been several times in the 15 years that we should have, you know, gotten a divorce. But in the last, you know, 5 years, there were a couple of times where I can't believe we figured it out. And it always came down to kind of a communication. It's always about communication.
Well, yeah. And, you know, there was a couple of times where we would figure something out and I'd have an aha after like that thing that we figured out, whatever it might be.
Right.
But I could see that me making a micro change not only helps our relationship, it makes me a better person anyways. And it's kind of like our relationship for a time for me was like, it's kind of a representation of what kind of person I am and what kind of person I'll be, you know? And I mean, I wasn't perfect at it, but a lot of times like I would go through that thought process. Well, like, okay, you know, I want to be a good person. I don't want anybody later in life going, that guy was an asshole. He was mean. He hurt me. He made me feel less than. I don't want.
Right.
That doesn't feel good. I mean, one of the first things I did after Peru is I came home and I wrote an apology letter to my siblings for the way I treated them 25 years prior when I was a kid.
Right.
Because it came up.
Yeah. Because you felt like you needed a balance and you wanted to let them know I was, you know, that you were sorry.
Yeah. And I mean,
There's a lot of that. There's a lot of that making amends for, or at least trying to communicate with somebody about the part that you played that you don't feel right about. But early on too, I realized that I was done letting anybody re-victimize me or abuse me with the things that I had done, perceivably the things I had done that were wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that all of those were teaching moments for me. And the only one that had any right to judge them was me.
Yeah.
And I kind of went through every strand of my being with these four stages, you know? And another thing I learned very early on was that my reality was a reflection of what was happening within myself, what I choose to observe manifested. And so like I'd see something, I'd co-create something, if you will, you know, with you or one of the kids or coworker, whatever. And if I didn't like it, there would be times where I built in this pause where I'd be like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to create, you know, this anymore. What do I need to see within myself? What do I need? How do I need to shift and change? What perspective do I need? And that's when I realized that healing was just perspective.
Well, yeah, that's powerful. That thought process that you're talking about right now, though, wouldn't you say that that thought process is still with you right now? And
always.
Every time you have a bad moment or interaction, you go straight back to that thought process? Because that's what I do.
Yeah. Well, you start to see patterns.
Yeah. It's like, nah, I didn't really like the way that interaction went. Let's first look at my part.
Yeah. Why am I doing that? Like, why am I thinking these things?
Yeah.
You know, and
like me having an argument with our kid the other day, right? I didn't like how it went. And, you know, there was my first instinct was, well, he did this and he did that. And then I'm like, no, I'm much more involved in that stupid shit. Where did it go wrong? And what part did I play? What part did he play? And how can we make this a teaching moment?
It's also about perspective.
Right.
Because if you think about it, really the disconnect there between you two was seeing each other's perspective and being validated, you know, or just being recognized, seen. I don't want to say validated, but really like seen, like I see you, I see where you're coming from. I can see your perspective.
Yeah.
You know, and anyways, yeah, it's fascinating how much it all boils down to perspective.
Yeah. Yep.
And I've been very grateful for all of the, you know, really and truly, it's like, I think also, you know, like for instance, being sober for over four years, you know, to have that kind of self-control. And I don't think about alcohol. Like even when I'm having a really bad day, it doesn't even cross my mind that I should do that.
Well, can you still call it self-control then?
Well, no, it's real healing.
Yeah.
But I guess that's my point is working with the plant medicines, there really hasn't been anything I've set an intention to want to gain a better perspective and understanding about that.
Exactly.
That I haven't. And a lot of the times just setting the intention that I'm going to go work with the plants and what the intentions are to work on while I'm there.
Start.
It starts. Sometimes I get that perspective before I even go to working with the plants. It just shows you again how little we really understand about time and about what the consciousnesses that work, you know, within the alkaloids of these plants.
Yeah.
And what they know of us.
And how the plants are connected to one another. And
or just how we're all connected.
And how we're gonna, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and not just...
Everyone go watch Fantastic Fungi.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And not just on Earth, but just like, you know, how we're connected to everything. You know, yeah. You hear Neil deGrasse Tyson talking about stuff like that all the time. And, you know, mm-hmm. we're literally stardust, you know, when you think about it. You know,
yeah.
It's pretty profound, you know. Anyway, so we're connected to a lot more than what we think we're connected to.
Right. We're connected to each other.
Yeah.
As humans.
Yeah.
You know, I'm never noticed that in my lifetime, but I notice it all the time now.
Mm-hmm.
Like you'll hear a word, you know, manifest, for example. Right. And all of a sudden you got guys on sports radio talking about manifesting a win.
Yep.
You know, that's not a word anybody was using 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is we're all connected because it's like, it's that 100th monkey effect.
Where I was just going to say that. Yep.
Just starts to reverberate. And that's like the new thing. That's great. And so when we're on the other side of the scale, where we're tipping to the other side, where we're trying to become better humans, despite what's happening in the world, mm-hmm. there's more of us regular humans than our elected humans.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're going to, it's kind of like it's an inside job, right? We're going to heal this planet from the inside out.
Yeah, totally.
Because as we get a bigger group of us, you know, psychedelics 5 years ago weren't anything.
Yeah.
I mean, the few people I told we were going to Peru and the fear, like everyone's like, don't go, you're going to die. You don't know what you're taking, blah, 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 blah. Again, I can tell you that that is the single best decision I've ever made in my life.
Yeah. There's something about just following your heart and following this intuition, your gut feelings.
People don't understand this, the, you know, we talked about it. I say you need to be selfish towards yourself and you say,
I say selflessness towards self. Yeah. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, when you decide I'm going to become the best human
mm-hmm.
and what will, by you putting the time into yourself reverberates to the fact where everybody around you enjoys you more, which then makes your life happier.
Yeah. Either that or you trigger them and they don't want to be in your life.
That's okay.
Yeah. Which inevitably makes your life better. Yeah. It sure made our life better. The people that have chosen to just weed themselves out of it.
The people that come and go. I'm always a bit surprised who goes and then.
And who stays.
And who stays.
Yeah.
Who stays is a good one. I mean, there's been so many surprises.
Yeah.
You know.
It's been nice.
Yeah. Like, you know, your dad said, relationships are a revolving door. Just.
Yeah.
Accept it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to just focus more on the people that want to be in my life. You know, yeah. we're funny. We're fun people. We have great kids. You know, we have a really great house, a really great atmosphere. You know, all those things that you don't get to take with you when you die, we don't care so much about. You know, we get to take so much with us now, you know, when we transition through death. You know, all of the things that we've learned, all the perspectives that we have, all the things that we've integrated, the equanimity, the emotional and personal mastery, those types of things, the relationships mm-hmm. with our children and each other, you know, and ourselves. Yeah. I mean, we've really, you know, that's one of the things with the plant medicines that I've just been the most happy about.
Yeah.
You know, it's a tool.
Life got more interesting, you know, and again, we dove into some weird woo-woo shit, right?
Yeah.
Really, that's fine.
Really weird.
Really weird woo-woo shit. But, you know, I also dove into some other things that you most people might call woo-woo. I like it. It's interesting. Like numerology. I like it.
Yeah.
Well, quantum physics. Get out of here. I'd never in a million years be like, you know, we traveled to see Nassim Harriman. Is that how you say his name?
Yeah.
Yeah. Twice.
Yeah. I think it was three times.
Three times. Yeah. To see a physicist talk.
It was brilliant.
Because
was
he's a different kind of physicist.
Yeah.
You know, he's kind of a woke dude. He's kind of a guy that is outside the box. You gravitate more towards people outside the box. There's a beauty in the outside the box.
Well, you just gravitate towards people that I call them post-thought philosophers that are like, okay, yeah, I get it. There's been a lot of...
I have not heard you say that before.
You're welcome.
I like that.
Saving it.
Yeah, you pulled that one out perfect. I was like, whoa.
But I think that's what I love. You know, yeah. It's sexy to me. Like, yeah. That's what really gets me
authentic.
Turned on is these post-thought philosophers that are like, we've read all of the year-to-date philosophy, and it's bullshit. It doesn't apply. we're gonna come up with our own stuff. Yeah. And there's not a field, you know, out there, whether it be the medical field or the physics field or the chemistry field or the history field, pick a field, where you don't have these woke guys and girls that are questioning everything.
Yeah.
And it's so, so important, you know?
And we've been a stagnant world for a long time.
Yeah. Really. Well, we've created these scientific religions.
Yeah. Where we already figured it out.
Yeah. So where, and we call that an educational institution that tells you how it is. And they don't give you any time to tangent into curiosity.
Yeah.
And if you try to tangent into a curiosity and bring up another hypothesis, they laugh at you. They guffaw. It's so ridiculously childish. It's like, hold on. Like, this is how
science should be a relay race.
This is how we grow.
Right?
Yeah.
Where the boomers give the baton to Gen X. Gen X gives the baton to the snowflakes. And you just, you know what I mean? Like, it should be, we're just passing down the information to the next people so that they have a complete foundation of where things are at to this point, and then they can move on. Then they can try to find the next peak.
Right.
You know, but we, you know, kind of the way things are right now is, oh, no, we've already figured everything out.
It's just so, that is so elementary. It's so elementary.
It's boring.
Especially if you look around, because I always am, I'm a results oriented individual, mm-hmm. actions oriented. You look around, you see how many sick people. We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
I mean, society, humanity has never been so sick. And so just literally effed up. It's completely effed up.
Yeah.
You know, when I really sat and meditated on what is it? How are we going to get out of where we're at? It all comes down to the individual work.
Yeah.
We all have to do our own individual work. That's why you hear people say, well, you're your own savior. Like, there's no one coming to save you. And that's true. If everyone had an opportunity to self-actualize, to heal, really and truly, to heal first, right?
Mm-hmm.
To then have the ability to self-actualize, and to gain some, you know, equanimity and some self-mastery, people would just intrinsically want to be better people.
Mm-hmm.
This is, we don't need hierarchy. We don't need presidents and government. You know, this is kind of a radical thing, but it's the truth. We don't need elders. We don't need a board of directors to tell us how we should and shouldn't do things. If we are all on this path of healing, naturally, we're just all going to get better. And it's not going to be in the too distant future where more people are going to be doing this type of work. And it's going to put a spotlight on the people that are not, the people that are super, super sick. And those people at some point are going to have to start looking within themselves, because they're going to realize that it doesn't matter that people aren't suffering from the fear anymore. People aren't suffering from, you know, aren't worried that they're triggered, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anytime somebody comes after me or starts yelling at me, it's really none of my business. And it says more about them than it does about anything else. I wish more people would see that. Like, when somebody stands up on a soapbox and grandstands and, you know, is attempting to trigger, you know, people, that kind of makes me laugh a little bit, because at the end of the day, you're in control of whether or not you're going to get triggered.
Right.
Like, people aren't making you feel certain ways or do certain things. That was something else that huge ahas for me after ayahuasca, that I was in control.
Shitty aha. Well, I mean, it's good, but it's a hard one to aha.
You know what, for me though, because I had been plowing through my victimization programming, I that empowered me that I was responsible. I was in control of how I was going to respond to people.
Yeah.
And that made me very curious about, well, how? Like, how do I stop these biochemical processes from happening where I actually feel like I'm going to rip that person's head off on the, you know, when I, you know, am driving, you know, like, what do I need to do? What kind of self-talk, what kind of realization, what kind of perspective do I need?
Yeah.
And it's practice. It just takes some practice after working with plant medicines to figure out what your style is to integrate, because everybody's style is different and everybody is going to use different modalities or processes that are going to work the best.
Yeah. And just keep looking and moving and trying things out until you find what fits, you know, because again.
Yeah. It could be Wim Hof breathing techniques and cold showers. It could be, yoga, it could be meditation, it could be hiking, Mm-hmm. You know, it could be painting, it could be woodworking. I mean, I think that's one of the things that I have the hardest time with when I see these self-proclaimed spiritual teachers that take their free downloads and then they monetize them. And then they make it sound like that everybody naturally is going to go through A, B, C, D, E, blah, 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 just like them. Because nobody is. They're just making basically a scrapbook, a video scrapbook for themselves. You know, when you start talking about how, you know, and I get it, like people want community and they want to feel like that they're normal and they don't want to feel like they're crazy.
They take that to the next level and they start telling you how things are supposed to be and how things are supposed to look and how you're supposed to feel.
Yeah.
And all these things when they haven't even done, this is work and they haven't even done the work. A lot of these people are just reading these guru books and then regurgitating.
Or, you know, they got
the people they prey on are the people.
Kind of like the newly awakened.
Right. Yeah. However you got there. You know, again, like some of the, you know, some people have had near-death experiences and then it's basically like, and I just got back from doing ayahuasca and we're in the exact same place and we're having the same ahas and the same epiphanies and we're making the same changes in life. You know, it's not necessarily a plant that puts you there. You're going to, people get there.
Yeah. Well, I actually love listening to people from all over the country, all over the world in different, with different backgrounds and different cultures. Explain in their own words something that I had a profound understanding of.
Yeah.
I like getting really quiet and just listening to the words that they use and the description and kind of like, you know, what they paint for you from their perspective.
Yeah.
You know, and I wish we could do more of that without somebody going, "Hey guys, I know everything. Hold on. You need to watch my YouTube video every week. It's on Wednesdays.
It's called Woke."
That's right. Yeah.
Woke with Henry.
But do you know what I mean? It would just be, I think that's one reason why we're doing this podcast. It's not because, "Hey, we know everything." It's like, "Hey, guess what? The more we know, we realize we don't know anything." Yep. And we want to connect with other people that are here and not the people that are still trapped in the woo-woo matrix, you know, and the matrix before that we were all born into. We're hoping to connect with the people that have pushed past all of it and have integrated fully back into their lives. They've realized that we're not going to go live off grid. You know, that to make a change, you actually have to be in the shit.
Yeah.
You know, you can't run away. You can't run away.
No, and I mean, trust me, we've thought about it. But it's not the right choice, you know. Sell everything you got, go buy a tiny house and live in the middle of the forest. And
And we could do that. We could definitely do that. But what's the, you know, we live in suburbia and.
The world is going through a massive shift in consciousness.
Yeah.
And you're going to help. By participating, and being in the thick of it, not in the forest or the jungle or wherever, you know. And again, I don't know. I think, you know. So the title of this podcast is "What Happened After Ayahuasca." Well, this is what happened after ayahuasca. Your life flips a 180.
We got tipped upside down by our heels and everything. Yeah. Everything got shaken.
All the shit we were holding on to, all the beliefs, all the...
What about all the things that came up into your awareness? Like, it was overwhelming for me to see all of the things that I really needed to shift or really needed to focus on and heal and pay attention to and do differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was so easy to get distracted just by the big things that happened in my childhood. It was those little tiny micro gestures. It was the little tiny nuances that my mother had, you know, downloaded into me when I was growing up. And those are the types of things too that started coming up into my awareness that I knew that I needed to start to focus on to be a healthier person, but to also be just a better mom and a better wife and a better friend and a better sister and a better daughter.
It's funny you say that because right when you said that, it reminded me of when I kept talking. There were times that I would talk and I'm like, "Oh my God, I sound like my dad right there."
Yeah.
you know.
And it amplifies. It's like, yeah. Oh my God, I had no idea that I was carrying that kind of bullshit.
Everything's amplified.
Yeah.
All the things that don't fit anymore. That's a great way to put it. Mm-hmm. They're amplified. Like you don't have a choice but to look at it. And if you don't look at it, you're going to be uncomfortable.
And it's super overwhelming sometimes. There were times where it was like, it's just too much. And it wasn't that it was like self-hate. Because I think a lot of people, when you're going through the process, you're like, oh my gosh, like I was a horrible person. But it's not to get focused on or to obsess about it. It's about recognizing that these experiences you co-created with yourself or other people. Mm-hmm. And what are you going to do about it? You know, how are you going to change it? And that's the thing, right? Is that you've got epigenetics that's at play. You've got environment. So however it was that you were, the environment was in your home is going to support, you know, basically how you were conditioned, the imprint that was made on you and how you're basically going to live your life. And I think that was such a profound realization to me, was that I realized within that first year of coming back from plant medicines, I did not want to carry on the traditions that my parents had downloaded in me in one way, shape, or form. I did not agree with the value sets and the standards that were set.
Yeah. Well, you could also see how it affected your life.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that to your kids.
Right. And unconditional love, that's when I always get hooked on, because, you know, love is it's so complicated and it's so infinite. And there's so much to explore there with the unconditional love. Like, what does that mean exactly, you know, versus conditional love?
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in a home where love was conditional. It was, you'll do X, Y, and Z, or I'll ignore you. I'll retract my love.
Rude.
Yeah. But you were too. Still are. Mm-hmm. You know, me too. I still am too with some of my, with my parents and a sibling. And it's like, well, you didn't do X, Y, and Z, so I can't love you.
Yeah.
I'm going to punish you. You know, there's no compassion. There was no compassion in my home.
But like Buddha says, it's not a gift unless you receive it. And so I don't accept the punishment gift. I just give that back.
Well, yeah. I mean,
but it takes you a while to get there.
Yeah.
With the family drama specifically, I think at first there's mourning. Sadness and feeling rejected.
I can unconditionally love anybody that chooses not to be in my life. I don't have to have hate for them or say nasty things about them. You know, I can unconditionally love them, even though part of the boundaries that I've set are you won't be in my life.
Good point.
Yeah.
Well, it takes less energy too, if you will. I mean, it really does. Being angry at somebody, directing hate. This is coming from someone who's always been revengeful and held grudges, proudly held grudges. That's a lot of energy.
Yeah.
Life is much better. You know, I don't talk to anybody on my side of the family, but I don't sit around hating them either.
Right. Well, no, that would say more about you than what about.
Yeah. But I mean, I just want to point that out. Like you can have,
absolutely.
I don't know what's going on the other side. And like, you know, like we like to say, that's none of my business.
Yeah. Eyes on your own plate.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, of course there's times where I'm wondering, you know, and there definitely are times where I miss them. But at the same time, in the big picture, it's like, I'm trying to be the best me.
Right.
And we're not a fit.
Yeah. And one of the things that we realized that was super valuable is to only surround ourselves with people that were going to be okay with us continuing to shift, adjust, change, and self-actualize.
Yeah.
As soon as you become a non-supporting person in my life, as I'm growing and evolving, that's not somebody that I want to have in my life. And so we have this interesting revolving door of friends sometimes.
Totally do.
Where it's like people come in. It's great. And then it's not like anything happens. It's just that they just leave.
Yeah.
And before we'd analyze it, like what happened there? Yeah. Like, I don't understand. Like, you know, I thought we were friends or, you know, like you and I would have these conversations. And what we realized is that it's okay, that we'll just ebb and flow.
Yeah.
And sometimes those people come back and they
say, there's only five people I care about maintaining a consistent relationship with.
Yeah, me too.
No disrespect to Trey. But there's only he's our little nephew. He's really cute. But there's no, I mean, for the most part, there's five people, you know, you and the four kids that you know, I wanna make sure. And Cubby. I wanna make sure that we have you know, I have great relationships and we don't have a break.
Yeah.
You know, and but you know, when you if you're thinking about taking a plant. See how I'm coming full circle. Mm-hmm. If you're thinking like about taking a plant, these aren't things to deter you. These are things, this is information that should give you kind of what you have to look forward to. But the outcome is great. Don't be scared of hard work. Don't be scared of, you know, having to dive through, like your path is probably not going to be like mine.
Right. It's not going to be.
Yours is going to be different. But what's going to happen is at the end of the day, you're going to become a better person. I've yet to meet one person ever. And I met some shitty people in Peru.
So have I.
I promise you. People, you're like, what the hell are you doing here? You're evil, right? They're not anymore. They're not. They went there because they were evil. They went there because they had a problem. And that's why they didn't make friends while they were there. In fact, they probably made more enemies, but they're great.
Yeah. It's interesting how it's none of our business people's processes.
Yeah.
You know, what's also interesting is that there's a lot of people that will never take plant medicines, but they're also getting kind of the same downloads.
Blows my mind.
Yeah. And I love it.
I was a plant elitist there for a while where I'm like, you don't take a plant, you won't be as smart as me. No, that was a stupid perspective. It's something that's happening globally. Like, you have to admit that. Like, you can see it happening everywhere. Well, this wanting to be a better person.
What I realized is, again, that my reality is a reflection of what's happening within myself. If I'm walking around my reality thinking that nobody knows what I know.
Yeah.
Well, then that's the kind of reality I'm creating, right?
Yeah.
Well, how egoic.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and so for me, it's like, I just assume people know what I'm talking about now. Mm-hmm. So I'll just launch into things. Blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I don't know if they know or they don't know or whatnot. They don't let on. When you talk to people like they know, they actually will respond like they know. But if they do or they don't, it doesn't matter, because that's the reality that I'd like to create. Is where we all know some of the basic fundamentals of expansion of consciousness.
Yeah.
And heart-based, if you want to call it, thinking or being.
Yeah.
And that we all are self-driven into self-curiosity, and we just want to, we're motivated by other people's successes who are motivated by our successes, and we understand that we're a collective.
Yeah.
You know, that we're just little fragmented pieces of each other, you know, that collectively we're one, ultimately what I would like, because I think that it would cure everything of all the dysfunction on planet Earth. You're hearing it here. I'm just kidding. Is that we actually collectively are like a big, huge hive.
Yeah.
You know, if nobody had any, quote, private thoughts, we all knew what everybody was thinking and their intentions, how quickly would people heal?
Quickly.
You know, you
walk into the grocery store
and you have a unclean thought about, you know, let's say a pedophile walks into a grocery store and they have an unclean thought about someone's child and everybody knows what they just thought. I think you're going to go home and you're going to be like, why the fuck am I having these types of, you know, thoughts in my head? And what do I need to be able not to have these thoughts in my head anymore? Or, you know, you get, you know, the president of the United States
kind of thought,
or a senator that stands up and they start, you know, blathering and you know exactly what their intentions are, you know, or a pharmaceutical company or your mom and your dad or your husband or your wife. And I think anybody that is holding on to secrets, that would terrify them. But I will tell you what, from my own journey, this is one of the things the plants helped me do. I had a shit ton of secrets and it felt really good to let them go. Mm-hmm. Till I was liberated by letting my secrets go. And I had, you know, one moment of letting go secrets where I really did think it was going to destroy my life. And what it really did actually was open the door for a completely different way of being that I never even thought was even kind of possible.
Yeah.
You know, and I want that for humanity.
Humanity needs it.
I want humanity to be able to, everybody to go blah.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, have somebody there, you know, loving them. I mean, like, you can't expect the people that you've hurt, right, through whatever it is that you've done to have, you know, expect them to have, you know, compassion and unconditional love and want you in their lives after you've done something horrible. But there are other people that will be able to offer, you know, compassion and forgiveness and unconditional love and acceptance, you know? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, I think between those two things, you know, like you said, it's an inside job and everybody being able to self-actualize and go within, you know, and then also everybody being able to know what everybody else is doing. I think that sounds tremendous. And think about that. Like, yeah, you'd also hear other people's, the thoughts that are like good. Right. So, like if you're around a quantum physicist or, you know, someone that knows an enormous amount about mathematics or whatnot, you know, and you could download and accumulate in your mind.
It's important. We live in a society of gaslighting.
Oh, I know.
I mean, all it's done to us daily, and I'm sure we recreate it. Right. But, mm-hmm. you know, everything's gaslighting. I don't know. I don't have another word for it. You know, I mean, clearly I was reading politics shit today, so that's what's on my mind, but.
And psychological warfare.
Yeah. It would be nice if that's gone away. It would be nice that if truth is kind of the main thing and that it's just, you can't tell a lie because it's so obvious.
Right.
That you basically shame yourself by telling a lie.
So that's another thing too, is that it's like our senses were heightened.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do pick up things.
Well, I mean, your senses are immediately heightened because when you come back from Peru, all of a sudden you feel like you can feel everybody's energy, which is a weird statement to make, but you kind of feel like you feel people.
Yeah. Or for instance, when you start to kind of go through your own self and you look at your own idiosyncrasies that are dysfunctional based on the things that you were conditioned into thinking, you know, were true when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And you start to unravel and unwind them, you intimately understand now why you're doing those idiosyncrasies. So when you're sitting there and you're talking to somebody and they all of a sudden are doing an idiosyncrasy that you're very intimate with, you know what that means. You can read people much.
Are you directing this at me?
No. Well, no. I'm just kidding. but you are have this capability of like reading people.
Yeah.
You know, by, you know, how they look up or, you know, what they're doing with their
tone changes or
how they're, you know, maneuvering their hands or
it's because you're more. I think if you break it all down, you become more present.
Yeah. Well, because you were really curious about yourself and why you were doing and behaving and saying and thinking the way that you were. And as you were breaking it down, that's one of the things you noticed about yourself.
That was one of the, I still think of all the things that I did that came out of doing plants, monitoring my own thoughts that just sort of happened was like eye-opening. Because then you start to get to the root of moods and judgments and, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Like judgments for me, again, when I realized.
I remember I walked in the grocery store one time. I'm like, why am I pointing out everybody in my head that's fat?
Right.
As an example.
Yeah.
And when I just kept analyzing, I'm like, because I don't feel good about myself right now.
Yep. You only see in others what you have within yourself.
Yeah.
And you only think about others what you see within yourself. And sometimes it's just easier to project on somebody else. It's always easier to on somebody else than it really is to take the thoughts that you're having regarding somebody else and redirect them back inside of you. But that, I tell you what, I went through like a 6-month process of specifically when you would bother the crap out of me, or I felt like you were bothering the crap out of me. And I would do this exercise where I'd write down everything, like everything about you that was driving me nuts. And then I would redirect that back to me. Well, do I feel that about me? It was like, yes, 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 yes. And turns out I never ever had to bother you about some things, you know?
It's awesome.
You know, recently, and I know we have to wrap it up, but like recently it's been about more about communication. It's been about these thought paradigms that I wasn't aware that I was creating kind of like these stupid stories in my head based on your micro gestures. And,
which was based on not clarifying.
Was based on me not communicating. Again, it's all about communicating. Yeah. And so I started asking you, you know, well, first of all, I asked for permission, you know, can I, when I think you're mad at me or when I am interpreting these, you know, micro gestures in a certain way, can I ask you if my interpretation of them is correct?
Yeah.
So we started doing this and it was kind of hilarious.
Well, I like the questions and I answered them honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was giving me a glimpse
into my head,
into your head.
Scary place.
Well, no, but I mean, like, you know, there's times where you would, what did I mean by that? Or did you mean to do this? Or, and the question was just as shocking to me as probably the answer was to you, right?
Yeah.
To me, I'm like, the fuck are you talking about? What?
Yeah.
Now?
Well, once you got done giggling, like, one time, I know you hate when I say this, but like legitimately you gave me this look and I am doing dishes and I'm thinking about, oh, he must be this and he must be that. And finally I'm like, so I just interpreted your, you know, facial expression to mean this. Is this true? And you were like, no, I was thinking about getting up and getting apples and peanut butter. And I literally
at least I wasn't going, I was thinking about basketball.
Yeah. Well, I just had one of these moments of like, of like, how could I be so off? And again, that comes from
past.
Yeah. From my past. I'm still six years into healing.
Yeah.
I'm still confronting these little nuances, kind of like these fast twitch muscles I've never been aware of, but in my personality.
Well, life doesn't get boring.
Yeah.
Because something always, you know, pops up to the surface. You're like, oh, okay, you're the one I get to look at now.
But dude, how great has this year been?
It's been great.
Yeah, turns out it's still my fault. Like, it's still, turns out it's still, no. Still something I have to see within myself.
No.
Yeah.
I don't look at all our problems or all your fault. I don't. No, I appreciate the question. That's the bottom line. I appreciate the question. And it gave me insight into, I mean, there's something I was contributing to that. So when you ask me those questions and you tell me the micro gesture in question, I go, okay, yeah, I'll make sure I don't as much.
I think the biggest thing is just, I'm a very communicative person and you're very much an inward person.
Yeah. Who would have thought? My mom told me I was the best communicator. So I'm a little baffled by that, but yeah.
But I mean, like, for instance, we saw a communication specialist at the beginning of the year and I would sit there and listen to you talk about, you know, like, oh, we had a disagreement and then you processed it. And these are the conclusions you came up to. And this is how you adjusted and you changed, but you never told me.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking you're not doing your work. I'm thinking, oh, he doesn't care.
Yeah.
And I literally, there were so many times I sat on the couch like, wow, okay. That's how you feel, huh? That's great.
Well, yeah, I guess I would just process it. And see, I'm really good at processing it and then just going, okay, let's move on.
You're like,
I don't. I really conquered that old bullshit of holding on to grudges. And
yeah,
like, I don't hold on to grudges.
It just hurts you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's heavy and it's dark and it's tiring and it's like, you know, I mean, I give you a long list of grudges I used to hold. I couldn't give a shit. Like, literally, I don't have negative thoughts on a regular basis. These are still people that I probably don't care for, but that's okay.
Yeah.
They don't care for me either.
But we're good. You don't want to be connected to people. Like, if there's legitimately somebody, you know, like, we're going through a big deal right now with my mom and my stepdad. And, you know, it's interesting because I've been trying to wrap my head around all of that. Like, you know, the big whys and what perspective do I need to see? And what I realized is that's really not serving me to try and, you know, fast forward and jump to that when I'm still grieving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a grieving, but how I feel moving forward is I wouldn't want to be linked to them through any sort of animosity or holding a grudge or hating them. Like, I can unequivocally say I do not hate them, that, you know, that I actually unconditionally love both of them. I'm incredibly confused by the choices that they have made. But my boundary is that there's no, I can't have people like that in my life.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, I mean, I think it's important, and it was a huge thing for me too, to let go of all of these sort of dense feelings that I was having towards people.
Yeah.
You know, I had to say a similar thing with my dad too. When I realized that I didn't want to reach out to my dad and send him a letter because the pain was continuing to connect us. It was the only thing I had left was this pain, you know, linking us together. And I was afraid that I wouldn't feel connected to him anymore if I resolved and tried to make amends for the part that I played in the deterioration of the relationship. And actually what happened was a great relief happened.
Yeah.
And I love my dad, and I love all of the memories that I have with my dad, you know, and it feels good to be connected to him through memory and not connected through dysfunction and pain. Yeah. Too. So
that reminds me of that. What was that beautiful quote in Honey Boy?
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. If you guys haven't seen that movie, go see that movie.
But I mean, like, talking about,
yeah, he goes, because all he I had to connect me with my dad was pain, and now you're trying to take that away from me too. And yeah. I was like, I started to yeah. cry because I know what
beautiful
that
quote.
Feels like. Yeah. I know what that feels like.
I kind of tear up thinking about it too, yeah. because I did the same thing. I yeah. tried to hold on to the pain because that's all I had left.
Yeah, the anger. You think that yeah. that's, you know, it's sort of that you know, like our children, it's like if they're not getting enough good attention, then they'll do naughty things to get
right.
bad attention, because any attention is better than being neglected and not being seen or heard.
Yeah.
It's the yeah. same thing.
Yeah.
So, oh yeah, that was such a good movie. I went down a Shia LaBeouf. Is that how you say it? Shia LaBeouf? I think so. Oh no, Shia LaBeouf, like in the buff. Shia LaBeouf. But I went down sort of a rabbit hole. He's a really great guy, and I love just how authentic he is and like how very transparent he is right now with his pain.
Yeah. I mean, on an odd note.
Yeah.
Cause I don't give a shit about their little competitions and their little award shows and shit.
Right.
I really don't care. I gave up on that shit 10 years ago. Buddy should have won everything, because that was like literally one of the best movies I've seen.
Yeah.
And the woman director, there was not a single female
yeah.
nominated, which, what are the odds that just men are the best in this kind of, come on, we're past know. That. But anyway, another tangent. But the movie is a relationship movie,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, there's, and it's basically an autobiography of his life, where he plays his dad, and you're watching him interact with the little him, which is kind of something that some of us had gone through with psychedelics. And yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's one of those, it's a very touching film. We all have parent issues, at least people in our age group.
Yeah.
So
I think about that. Like I want to ask him some deeper questions.
Deep questions.
You know,
hey, Shia, like, you want to be on our podcast, yeah, buddy? Yeah,
exactly. But I mean, I want to ask him some deep questions about, like, you know, how that felt to play the part of his dad.
Man.
Did he, I mean, like,
lose my shit.
Like, I, you know what? I think the amount of compassion he probably built for his dad by playing his dad and seeing it from that perspective had to have been incredibly profound.
Well, didn't he? He didn't start talking to his dad until he decided to make the movie.
Yeah.
And it was a 7-year
gap. Yeah.
Gap. So, which, you know, I get.
Yeah. He was living his life. I came across this quote one time. It said, sometimes to live a life, you have to. Sometimes you have to live your life first. Or wait, to live a life, you have to live life first. Like, you almost have to have a whole life that you live first before you can live life.
There you go.
I'm like, oh my goodness, let me get it right.
And on that note, you hear the music playing?
Yep.
Yep.
You're hilarious.
Okay.
All right. Well, Mr. Joel, thank you so much for
thank you
spending these past 2 hours with me.
Well, we're going to do another one shortly, I'm sure.
Yep, I'm sure we will.
So,
okay.
Anyway.
On that note.
Thank you.
Okay, see ya.
Bye.